My name is Mark Ritchie. I serve as our Secretary of State and have the responsibility to convene our first meeting, our organizational meeting of our electronic roster task force. Want to start with introductions of the task force members that are here and also a quick introduction of our folks in the room. So, Sally, please start with that.
I'm Sally Olson. I'm with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and helping staff the task force.
And, Sally, thank you so much. And, Gary, thank you so much for all your efforts in getting us here and getting us on track. Thank you.
I'm David Maeda. I'm the Minnetonka City Clerk representing the League of Minnesota Cities.
Gary Poser, the Director of Elections for the Secretary of State's Office.
Grace Wachlerowitz, Elections and Voter Services for the City of Minneapolis and Minneapolis Schools, and I'm representing the school districts.
Pat McCormick, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety.
Debbie Erickson, Elections Manager for Crow Wing County, representing the Minnesota Association of County Officers.
Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State.
Carolyn Parnell, I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota IT, otherwise known as MINIT, and the State CIO.
Mary Kiffmeyer, State Senator.
Carolyn Lane, State Representative.
Let's just start in the front row and just quickly tell us who you are.
I'm Sean Weiss. I'm the Legislative Assistant for Senator Terry Bonhoff, who couldn't be here today. Kent Klein, Server County Auditor in Iowa.
I'm Dennis Parrish, Jasper County Auditor in Iowa.
Dennis Smith, Office of the Secretary of State. Sam Gurdy, Governor Dayton.
Julie Strother, soon to be with the Secretary of State.
Eric Bell, Common Cause of Minnesota.
Jeremy Schrader, Common Cause of Minnesota.
John Acton, Legislative Affairs.
Greg Kibinger, Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Max Hilfren, Professor of Mathematics and Computer Science at Gustavus. Davis.
Jim Galdman, Committee Administrator, House Elections Committee.
Bart Frankel, Observer.
Bryn House with House DFL Caucus Research.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you especially to our friends from Iowa, election administrators from Iowa, who are going to share with us some of the exciting things that are going on with electronic rosters down in Iowa. First item of business, election of chair and vice chair, the nomination and election process. Nominations for chair.
Mr. Chair, I would like to nominate Secretary Ritchie for chair.
And I would like to second that.
Other nominations? Other nominations? Other nominations? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Election for vice chair. Is there a nomination or nominations for vice chair?
Mr. Chair, I would nominate Debbie Erickson.
Thank you. Is there a second to that nomination?
I'll second that nomination.
Are there other nominations? Are there other nominations? Are there other nominations? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. And Debbie, we're going to thank all your bosses up there for, we know it's this extra work on top of everything else.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Today we're beginning the process of looking at the overview of where electronic rosters are in the world. A little bit of experience in Minnesota, some other experience in other states. The technology has been fast-moving in some ways, but slow-crawling in others. So we're going to kind of start with an overview of how these have been used already and are being used in other parts of the country and also in our own state. Max, are you prepared to present about the use of the rosters for pre-registered voters? Please come forward, introduce yourself, and thank you very much.
Sure, thanks. Max Halperin, as I said, professor of mathematics and computer science at Gustavus. The last few years I've been building on my background in computer technology to study electronic poll book systems. Although it's still a small part of what I do, I have a lot left to learn. The most basic use of these systems has been for the checking in of pre-registered voters in ordinary precinct-based polling places on election day. Even in those systems, typically there are extra features for handling exceptional circumstances that could include election day registration, we'll hear about later, but other things like redirecting voters to a different polling place if they're at the wrong one, that sort of thing. I'm going to set all those aside and just focus on the three core functions that are served by an ordinary paper roster, which is first that they support some portion of the eligibility checking, that the voter is registered in the precinct, has not yet voted, neither in person nor absentee, and that they don't have any unresolved challenges. And then the second function is the posting of history after the election to allow identifying inactive voters as well as providing voter lists to political parties and whatnot. And the third is that the roster is the ultimate audit trail, that even if everything goes smoothly, it allows ordinary citizens to have increased confidence that the election administrators haven't done anything like stuff the ballot box with more ballots than signatures. That's something that's verified on election night at the polling place in front of as many members of the public as care to witness it. And beyond that can serve as a diagnostic audit trail. If something goes wrong, somebody's history isn't properly posted, you can dig into that record and see what happened. My understanding is that there are jurisdictions that have chosen to serve all three of those functions using the digital record, while there are other ones that have chosen to leave the audit trail portion on paper. And the Iowa Precinct Atlas system we'll be hearing about later would be an example of that. And that's also a requirement of the Minnesota pilot project. In these sort of precinct-based systems, typically there is some local networking within the polling place that allows each voter to check in at any of the computer stations, independent where their name falls in the alphabet. But there doesn't need to be any networking that extends from the polling place to the outside world, because just like you print a roster in advance, you can download the data in advance, you can upload the history after the election is over. And that conveys considerable advantages for simplicity, reliability, security. Alternatively, you can take that basic configuration as a foundation and then layer on top of that the ability that those polling places that can successfully connect to a central server can check in order to give some extra kind of would-be nice features beyond the basic maintenance of the voting system. And even if they have intermittent connectivity, can check in when and as they're able for that. And I think we'll be hearing later that the more recent versions of the Precinct Atlas system have moved in that direction.
Thank you. Any questions on the pre-registered voters? Thank you, Max. Election day registration. David Maeda has done this, been there. Please share with us your experience.
And Mr. Chair, I am passing a handout. I put together about the history of our use of poll books in the city of Minnetonka Just for some basic information, our city has about 36,000 registered voters. We do fall into three different school districts, the Hopkins School District, the Minnetonka School District, and the Wayzata School District, which I'll point out is provides a challenge when we use our poll books. And then from 2009, when we started using poll books, to 2011, we actually had 27 precincts. After redistricting, we got that number down to 23. Election day registrations, we've used these since 2009, and in 2012, the presidential election, we actually had about 5,000 election day registrations in the city of Minnetonka out of the 35,000 people that voted. For our city elections, we don't have quite the turnout. We, in 2011, for example, we had 133 election day registrations out of the 4,600 people that voted. So the city elections, our election day registration use is minimal, and we don't find it as useful as in big state elections. We began using poll books in 2009, and what we did in 2009 is very similar to what's in the pilot project for this fall. We picked two of our precincts to use both the pre-registered rosters and the election day registration feature of the poll books. The two precincts we had, and I should point out our election judge in the audience, Peggy, was one of our election judges in Ward 1, Precinct B. As you can see, we didn't have a huge turnout. We had 243 people vote in that precinct and only six election day registrants. And then in our other precinct that we chose, we only had 81 voters and two election day registrants. So it wasn't much of a robust test of the technology in 2009. But our election judges did like the technology enough, especially the election day registration piece, that we continued using it for the state elections in 2010 and 2012. The way it works is our election judges, if the voter has a current driver's license, can scan the driver's license into the poll book. It takes the information that's required for voter registration, the voter's name, the voter's residential address, the date of birth, and the driver's license number, and it pre-populates an electronic form in the poll book. The poll book then confirms that the voter is in the right precinct. If the voter is not in the right precinct, we can actually print out a map to give them to go to the correct precinct. So it verifies that every voter in the precinct is actually eligible to vote based on their address in the precinct. The poll book also then fills in the mandatory information, district information. For our city, we have wards and precincts, but also, as I mentioned before, we have three school districts. So it makes sure that the voter's record is put in the correct school district, and the reason that's important is we don't want to give voters the wrong ballot with the wrong school district, so it helps us with school district splits. As I mentioned, if the address isn't in the precinct, we can actually print out a map to give to the voter and directions to the correct polling place. We then print out the voter registration application. The voter reads the oath and signs to make basically so we can give Hennepin County, at this point, a paper copy of what they're getting from every other city in Hennepin County. I have a section here on what we do when the voter doesn't have a current driver's license. I won't go through the entire process. Basically, it's we have to type in the information rather than scan and everything. I will mention that it does help for voters that have changed their name or changed their address, which is many of our voters in Minnetonka. That's the reason they're re-registering. It actually populates a previous name portion of the voter registration form and the previous address portion of the voter registration form, which is helpful for Hennepin County to update the correct voter record. The benefits we have found of election day registration doing it this way is that all the verification requirements we can confirm in the election. This helps the election judge make sure that the form is completed. So the age of the voters verified, the residents in the precinct, and then we also, election day registrants are required to show ID, and there are certain things allowed in law, and the electronic poll book walks the election judges through that to make sure that they've followed and everything is completed on the form. Everything else I think I have covered. The one thing I would mention is for the pre-registered things, Professor Halpern mentioned it, but I think it really, the benefits we saw in 2009 when we used it is the line management, where currently we have paper rosters that are broken into sections of the alphabet, and this completely eliminates us so the voter can go to the next election judge that's free, and I think that would greatly help in line management in the precinct.
Any questions? David, I was there in 2009, and it was just kind of an excitement also among voters, like something new, and, you know, and that was a great, and there were, of course, many vendors there, almost more than voters, so that was also kind of interesting. that was fun. David, cost. Share a little bit of bottom line savings.
Well, the 2009 election, we actually, the vendors, similar to this fall, we required the vendors to provide all the hardware. So there were no costs to us in 2009. For 2010, 2012, I have purchased some licenses from Data Card, and I can't actually tell you the cost. It was
minimal.
Certainly minimal.
Yeah.
And the cost savings at this point are also, I think, minimal. I think the greatest cost savings we'll see is part of the legislation that's now law is integration of the statewide voter registration system. So this will greatly reduce the county's data entry after the election.
Great. Other questions? The next item, the pilot projects, which has been briefly mentioned. Gary Poser.
Mr. Chairman and members, part of the legislation that also created this task force authorized an e-poll book pilot that could be used within three counties, being Clay County, Hennepin County, and Ramsey County, and specifically in the cities of Dilworth, Minnetonka, Moorhead, St. Anthony, and St. Paul. That pilot project is kind of twofold. It involves somewhat pre-registered voters, and then it also involves the Election Day registration portion. The Election Day registration portion will be the more complete pilot where these cities will capture Election Day registration information on the e-poll books, and as part of the pilot and the money that was provided in the legislation, our office will be upgrading SVRS to include a feature to upload the Election Day registration information directly, queuing that up for the counties then, so they don't have to type the information, and then they'll be able to complete their registration piece, which is, you know, while David has been using the Election Day registration piece, basically they've been printing out the form and providing those forms to Hennepin County, and Hennepin County has still been manually inputting those. So this piece will complete the cycle of that part of the piece so that we'll be able to load those up electronically. The pre-registered piece, we will work on getting pre-registered information so the e-poll books can be piloted, can be used on Election Day in conjunction with a printed roster, which the law also requires that the real information for the pre-registered voters is still going to be captured on printed rosters. But we won't have the ability to upload the voting history from any of the e-poll books. That's not going to be part of the pilot piece. As part of this pilot, then, we did have a conference call with the jurisdictions involved on May 29th, determined how we were going to contact voters, our vendors, to participate in this pilot. So on June 3rd, we did post on our website an invitation to vendors to complete a survey to participate in the pilot. We also emailed to vendors that we knew that had e-poll books. So eventually, as part of that, we contacted 13 vendors, seeing if they had an interest in participating in the pilot. We did get 8 replies from vendors that were interested in participating in the pilot. We did have another conference call with the jurisdictions yesterday afternoon and determined how we were going to distribute those vendors amongst the cities and counties that were involved. And so then we'll be moving forward with working with those vendors in the coming weeks to get them up to speed to know the file formats that they'll need for the Election Day registration and all of those things to continue with the pilot. So we'll be continuing to work with the jurisdictions involved as the pilot moves forward.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Gary, are all 8 vendors, are all the equipment going to be used in some capacity, or is it up to the local jurisdictions to decide which one they want to use?
As part of the determination yesterday, we did assign, so all 8 of them will be used somewhere within the participating cities. And I should say all of the vendors did agree to participate in both the pre-registered portion and the Election Day registration portion as well.
And David, did I understand correctly that you use laptops from within your office and you purchased this kind of a scanning system, or how did that work for you? in your previous experience. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. What we have done over time is collect as many laptops that are being replaced in our city, and those are the ones we're using for the. So the 18 precincts are doing this, and it is because the hardware piece, that's the amount of laptops we have. And then we've also we purchased printers and scanners for all those 18, so there are peripherals that we have purchased at this
point. And that helps with that ADR part.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
And Gary, when the thinking process about posting history, you know, the kind of next step, is that in an arc out there in the future somewhere? Or
yes, right. That still is planned that we will get to that just for this fall's pilot to have something ready that we can get into SVRS and have, you know, it put into production. Right, the first thing, the top priority, I think that we've realized from that would benefit the counties most and speed up the process the most is the election day registration piece. You know, the counties currently do a pretty good job of getting the history posted from scanning the barcodes that are on the printed rosters, and the part that has been slowing them down, especially in the big years, is to get the election day registrations input. And you know, Hennepin County has 130,000 election day registrations. If we can eliminate all of that typing and queue all of that data up for them, that's, I think, where the biggest savings will be.
And all those typos.
Yes.
Other questions? Other states have begun to innovate, and one of the early ones was the notion of voting centers. Max, are you prepared to share with us how other states are using these in some ways that we haven't considered necessarily here?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I think it's important for the task force to understand the full context of how systems are used elsewhere, even if just so that you can understand what portion of what you read about other electronic poll book systems is relevant. Vote centers are not something that I understand to have been contemplated in Minnesota. The vote center model was pioneered in Larimer County, Colorado in 2003. And what it entails is that each voter in the county is free to select a polling place. They're not assigned based on their precinct of residence. And so that poses an additional requirement on the electronic poll book systems as far as checking for double voting. Actually, you can use a straightforward system if you're willing to settle for deterrence through checking after the fact whether someone's voted at two vote centers. And I believe that has actually been done in pilot projects. But so far as I'm aware, all the states that authorized vote centers for more than just pilot projects required that the electronic poll books detect in real time any attempt to vote at a second vote center. And so that means these systems inherently have to have networking from the polling place out to some centralized server to fulfill that requirement. And that brings additional complexity risk that are not present in the more straightforward systems. A cautionary tale about that would be the experience of Denver in 2006 when they adopted the vote center model. They did not use the software from Larimer County. They commissioned a vendor to create new software. It was not well done. It was not adequately tested by either the vendor or the county. I should say this kind of software is much more difficult to adequately test than software that's localized within each polling place, because you have to make sure it'll behave properly at scale, and it didn't. And so, you know, it was considered a large-scale deployment for a vote center, 55 vote centers as opposed to 30 in Larimer County. But what you need to recognize is in Colorado, a lot of the voting happens prior to Election Day. And so actually they were only anticipating 90,000 voters across those 55 vote centers. So they're similar to, you know, typical Minneapolis precinct size. Of those 90,000, about 20,000 went home without voting because they were so frustrated by the inability to get the equipment to work. And It's also a cautionary tale with regard to contingency planning, which is an issue whether you use vote centers or not. Denver had two layers of contingency plans, and neither of them did any good that day, for reasons I could go into. Since then, vote centers have been successfully deployed elsewhere. Indiana has recently been using them in some counties. But wherever they're used, they do bring additional risk, additional complexity, and may have difficulty scaling to the kind of voter loads that we experience in Minnesota.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if Mr. Helfgren can also comment maybe on vote centers have also been used, though, then to reduce the number of actual polling places. So we're used to the 4,000 precincts across Minnesota. I think one of the vote center things is they're either voting early by mail or at the vote centers during early voting, and they are not using as many polling places as they used to. They're combining them into larger polling places that can handle them or have the internet connections that they need in order to check for the duplicate voting. Is that kind of what you've confirmed? Or?
Yeah, I would concur with that. Given early voting, they didn't necessarily see the need for so many polling places on Election Day. They were having difficulty providing accessibility, have a compliant sites in enough locations in Colorado, apparently. That was a factor. And you're right, on the positive side, that makes the technology easier to get to work because you have fewer places you need to get those connections to, fewer places your technical staff have to visit, and so forth, yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Professor Halperin, you said earlier, the first time you were at the table, that in these polling systems, they could connect to a central server for extra features beyond the voting system. I assume that one of them would be the duplication checking real-time that you just spoke of. What would be another example of what features?
Yeah, I don't want to steal too much of Mr. Klein's thunder because I'm sure he'll be telling you about the features his system provides. In some states, such as Iowa, they have a tradition of poll watchers who are sent by the political parties to keep tabs on who actually has gotten out and voted, and the system could provide that function in those states. That's not part of Minnesota's tradition. It's also very helpful. I think a huge thing is the coordination with late arriving absentee ballots. You know, we always have a real rush in the county auditor's offices, city clerk's offices, getting those last AB annotations onto the rosters by hand after they're printed. You have the exact same situation if you're storing data onto the electronic poll book storage devices in advance. That's just like printing in advance. You're going to have some late additions that you'd like to get on.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Professor.
Our next item is the review of the kind of schedule, the work plan, you know, how we're going to accomplish the charge or the tasks that have been assigned to us through the legislation. You have a copy of the legislation, you have a copy of the draft work plan, and a copy of the potential schedule of meetings. Several of our members could not be here today, and of course the open appointments process being used by the governor is not yet completed, and so we don't want to get ahead of ourselves and want to make sure all of our members, or as many as are possible, can participate in this more broad discussion about our work plan. But we do need to settle on our next meeting date. Experience tells us not everyone will be able to be at all the meetings and will always be short someone, but the farther in advance we can plan, the better we will be in terms of attendance. So looking at the proposed next date and looking ahead at the proposed work plan for meetings 2 and 3, I think is appropriate for us to cover today and to cover the bulk of that when the additional appointees are completed and as many of us can be there. Is the August 15th date close enough to, given that it's summer, stepping into the state fair time and all of that, is there any super problems that we have with that date? There will be some problems for sure, but...
Same time, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, same time. Is the assumption then that this is, what is this, 10 to 12?
10 to 12. And Barbara Welty, who represents the townships, said this time worked. I mean, this time of the day, she can get up and be here by 10. So does that work for you, Senator Kipmeyer?
Right. I was just checking.
Yeah.
Because on the list, it didn't have a time,
yeah.
Just dates.
For now, let's say 10 to 12, August 15th. This proposed schedule of timings, it would be great if this would work, but if for some reason we run across a time that has a particular problem, we'll come back to this when everybody is here, so if that's okay. Meetings 2 and 3, the draft work plan, what we did was take the charge from the legislation and just organize it chronologically so that our focus is one of the focuses in the charge from the legislation. Electronic roster technology, including different types of electronic rosters. Today, of course, we're beginning that process with some brief overviews, and we'll look at one of the most successful, the Precinct Atlas. The plan is at the next meeting, vendors, some of whom are the ones who've already responded, but vendors, including those that are really hardware dependent and those that are more software or non-hardware dependent. For example, David was describing using laptops. We would include both of those kinds of vendors so that we begin to hear what are the possibilities. And then some attention to reliability, the ability to upload data digitally, which is linked to the cost savings by reducing staff time requirements, and the cost savings, of course, are important in terms of anything that's going to add cost. Are there savings as well? The townships in particular have been very concerned about questions of smaller jurisdictions and their experience with the some of the other equipment, the AutoMart and the disability equipment. They want to really have a robust discussion about that. And the potential cost, hardware, software, licensing fees, trying to make sure that we are getting real full disclosure from vendors about what the full costs are. And fortunately, we have David, who has some direct experience, but I think all of us have had some experience with this question and want to push hard. Those general areas would be the focus of our next two meetings. And we have, roughly speaking, we know the date for the next meeting, and then the following one would be in early September after the fair, after things had calmed down again. I want to see if there's any general discussion or specific questions or suggestions about that part of our anticipated work plan. More or less okay? Well, so, you know, be reviewing this work plan in general as we go forward, because at our next meeting we'll have time and a full contingent, I hope. I'm sure be short one or two, but we'll be able to go through the rest of it and also bring your calendars also, and so we can nail those dates down. Getting the dates nailed down does not, of course, mean that things won't come up and we might have to make changes, but if we can get them locked in now. We are on a fairly tight time frame, and you can see that we made room for one extra meeting, but we do have a lot to do in a relatively short period of time. Any other questions or other items before we move to our presentation from the Precinct Atlas?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think that I'm noticing on the final meeting,
yes.
It says final report and draft legislation. and this is probably assumed, but I think it would be good if the task force could see some draft legislation and draft report prior to the final meeting. Now, that may be assumed to be in there somewhere, but I mean not just recommendations, but you know, an actual draft of the report and legislation, like at meeting 9 or something.
So under task force recommendations, comma, draft report, comma, and drafts legislation.
Mm-hmm. Because that way,
excellent,
then you have meeting 9 to see the draft.
Yeah.
Meeting 10, we can give input and whatever needs to be done.
And there's space also for a meeting 11 if mm-hmm. if need be.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Other suggestions? Going once, going twice. Great. Are you all set up on the thing? Please join us. And I think in our packets we have some materials.
Do you have multiple copies?
The demonstration again.
Yeah. Right.
Everybody else.
Well, this little card is being passed around. Again, I want to introduce myself. I'm Dennis Parra, the Jasper County Auditor and Election Commissioner. I'm a Democrat. I'm also the president of the Multi-County Consortium in Iowa. Over half the counties in Iowa now use Precinct Atlas to verify voters, check in voters, and also at the end of the process to download the information to the statewide voter registration bank. Ken Klein is the auditor from Sarasota County. He's a Republican.
If you could use the mic for the purpose of the tape, thank you.
More than glad to.
Sorry.
All right. We don't need to begin.
No.
Okay. Ken Klein is the auditor and election commissioner from Sarasota County. Ken is Republican, as I mentioned. He is the genius behind the curtain. He's the gentleman that actually developed the program. The program came about because Ken went to a precinct on election day and noticed that his poll workers were having some difficulty, and I believe that Iowa probably has as many or at least as many or more laws than most states when it comes to elections, and it's difficult because in Iowa, for instance, from my neck of the woods, I may have five elections a year, and so, you know, it's not often that you come in and run elections. Plus, our poll workers in Iowa, average age is about 104, and so I'm just kidding, but we do use that group of people extensively because they're available, and so training them is an issue, and the Precinct Atlas is one of those ways that assisted them. Ken sat down at the table, began checking in voters, noticed it was difficult for them to remember all the procedures and all the laws and to get it right and have the handwriting correct on all the forms and all the various things that have to go right. So he came away and sat down with his IT people and began developing a program from actual experience that would alleviate this and help the poll workers and check in voters at a higher rate of speed. This resulted in the Precinct Atlas, which was tested and used in 2006. Nine. The public overwhelmingly accepted it. They liked it. It is a process that takes the poll worker methodically through the process, and you will see this when Ken demonstrates it, so that the chance of error is extremely minimal. As a matter of fact, the screen will tell the poll worker what to do next on any given process in the election process, whether it's same-day registrant or a change of address or you're in the wrong polling place, or maybe you're a potential felon, or any of those different things. Then Ken began sharing it with the other counties, and the largest county in the state of Iowa uses it, which is Polk, which is Des Moines, and some of the very smallest counties in the state use it as well. The auditors in those counties made it fit their counties. One of the unique things about the Precinct Atlas is it is Iowa-specific. When I began looking at poll books and looking at some of the major vendors, it was going to cost an arm and a leg, plus they were very generic. And this one is extremely specific and can fit my needs in my county, yet stay within the boundaries of Iowa law. And that's its uniqueness. And that would be something that, the state of Minnesota, I think, would be interested in as well, is something that is tailored to be specific to you and yet in each of your jurisdictions and yet stay within the boundaries of Minnesota law. As I said, this is now a multi-county organization. Over half the counties use it. We showed it to the legislators. We showed it to the governor. He connected us with the DOT. We use a form of the driver's license, the barcode on the back of a driver's license to scan in and identify the voter, verify the voter. We can also use a voter card that has the barcode on it that verifies the voter as well, making things much easier and much quicker. I'm going to turn this over to Ken, but I do want to touch on something that was the professor briefly talked about at the end of his presentation. I know that Minnesota does not have poll watchers, and I'm not even sure if it's legal in Minnesota to have a poll watcher. In Iowa, we've had a history of having poll watchers set at the polling place and have a list. And when Dennis Parrott comes in, we just mark his name off. So we know he's voted. He's just voted. That's all. Don't know how he's voted. They go back at the end of the evening, make phone calls because Ken Klein hasn't showed up. Got it on the list. He hasn't showed up. And so they say, hey, Ken, you know, you got to get to the polls. Okay. They close at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. One of the fascinating features that I think Minnesota might be interested in, even though it's not poll watching at the polls, is the feature where real time you can determine from a remote area who has voted and who has not. So the political parties, the political candidates could set in Minneapolis or St. Paul and tell from another region of the state who's voted and who has not, and then tell their Democrat or Republican counterparts, you got to go call our folks, they're not turning out. And it's real time, and that's a really great thing in Iowa, maybe not in Minnesota. But
I think here it makes everybody really nervous to talk about that kind of thing, because we don't register by party and we don't want people to know we voted. And if we're the local car dealer, we especially are nervous about that. But we're liberal here. Iowa can do what they want to do. You know what I mean? But
it's actually illegal to create a list of people who have voted until after the polls have closed in Minnesota.
Right? Yeah,
but
that's fine.
It does make you guys first in the nation in that caucus more interesting now that we know this part.
Well, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, we're kind of brethren here. You guys do caucuses. You're getting deeper into absentee voting. We came and actually looked at Minnesota's same-day registration laws, and Iowa mirrored them. Secretary Morrow worked with Secretary Ritchie and mirrored those very closely, and so we copied Minnesota. And now Iowa is pretty happy with the process. But I want to end up, because I want to give Ken as much time as possible. He has a lot of things that he wants to show you. But again, thank you. It's nice to come to a neighbor state and present this, and I hope you find it interesting.
Great. Thank you, and congratulations for making this such a big success.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ken?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, task force members, for the chance to be here today. I have a PowerPoint, and my goal is to be through it in 4 minutes or less. If I can figure it out.
So we're up on these screens, and I'm hoping that Okay. And Sheriff Gore County is Mason City.
Mason City, Iowa, yes. 2 hours south. The election administrator's prayer, basically anywhere in the United States, is please don't let it be close. Why is that? Because there are no perfect elections. There simply isn't. And frankly, if it's close, then all the little imperfections become important. And if it's not close, nobody cares. The two competing principles of elections are voter access and control and integrity of the election process. The more that we provide voters access to the voting process, the harder it is to control that integrity. The more controls we put in place, the harder it is to assure access. The result of these competing principles, in my opinion, is more and more election laws over time. The reality of that, or the impact of that, is that county auditors, is up to the term in Minnesota, county auditors, We call them precinct officials. I think you call them election judges. So those people have more and more responsibilities as a result of those laws. Before Election Day, the control of the process is concentrated. County auditors basically have direct supervisory control over that process. On Election Day, we somewhat at the extent of the mercy of the precinct officials or election judges. Precinct officials, election judges are honest and intelligent people. They are diligent. They want to do the right thing. We provide training classes. We provide election materials and forms. We provide rover support on Election Day. We do everything that we can to support them. But quite frankly, that is not enough. Problems that we have seen, and I believe that election jurisdictions have everywhere, is assuring the correct treatment of each voter under the law. We have complicated forms that may include errors or be incomplete. We have anxiety for precinct officials worrying about doing the right thing, handling this voter correctly under the law, each and every voter over 14 in Iowa, 14-hour election day. Which results in difficulty in recruiting and retaining precinct election officials. Additional problems, we have voters being sent to the wrong precincts, voter frustration with delays, voters' lack of confidence in the precinct officials, having confidence that they know what they're doing. Real-time communication with the precincts. Outside of the issue of poll watchers and knowing who has voted, communication with the precincts has many administrative or management benefits. Post-election processing of voter activity and election records is another large administrative issue for us. The unique thing about elections, we don't get do-overs. We have to get it right the first time. And that, quite frankly, if you think about government, is relatively unique. The Precinct Atlas is more than a basic electronic poll book. What is it? It's a non-controversial proven solution. It was developed, used. It's been used in more than 58 Iowa counties over the past 4 years to process voters correctly and efficiently. The screens essentially walk the precinct election official through any process, regardless of the voter situation. In Iowa, we have at least 6,000 possible voter situations. If you extrapolate all the possible variables, that I have an absentee, that a ballot, that I brought it with me, that I voted it, that I lost it, that I'm going to cast a provisional ballot, that I have an inactive voter registration status, or I move within a precinct or across a precinct line, all those possible combinations, it's extraordinary to think how many that
is. 6,000 possible combinations?
More than that, yes. Right. Precinct Atlas provides a complete, accurate, and legible paper record. And frankly, this is essentially Iowa law right now. I'm supportive of this. And it's ironic. The purpose of the electronic system is to provide that paper record. It greatly improves post-election processing in Sierra Gorda County in 2008, before we had the system. We have 32,000 registered voters in Sierra Gorda County. It took us 11 weeks of staff time to process those voters after the election. 2012, relatively same voter turnout. It took us 2.5 weeks of staff time. So extraordinary savings there. One thing that we have just seen the tip of the iceberg is the post-election analysis. We can actually break down when voters show up. And what's most enlightening to me is we can actually see when the election day registrations show up. And it's a fairly brief period of time, at least in Sierra Gorda County. We also get detailed information on problem situations. The program provides authoritative processing of voters. It reduces tension and confrontation between precinct election officials and the voters, increases confidence in the election process, and quite frankly, results in improved recruitment and retention of precinct officials. We had seven people after the 2012 election come in the week after the election and say, "Hey, I heard how much fun it was." How many times have you heard that phrase?
A few.
Have you?
Not very often.
And we worry then, you know.
Yeah.
I handed out a card. While Ken now has really gotten into the Precinct Atlas, on the front you see the Charles Atlas type figure. On the back, something I want to point out. The Precinct Atlas has won 3 national awards and 1 statewide award. As you can see, the Election Center Stars and Stripe Award. The next one is Iowa State Association of Counties Excellence in Action Award, Achievement Award, Best in Category, National Association of Counties, and then the Center for Digital Government. At one point, we had at least 2 vendors that wanted to purchase the program for us, and we wanted it to be Iowa-specific for that period of time, and we did not sell it to them. It's become pretty renowned. I know Ken got a call from the state of New York. Just how many? Maybe you want to tell the story, Ken.
You mean Onondaga County?
Yeah.
It's roughly the same size, I think, as Polk County, Iowa. We did a demonstration, and frankly, they said send us a proposal. Sierra Verde County is not a business, and frankly, we don't want to be a business. We're struggling to be a government. But in Iowa, we're in the position where we provide support to Iowa counties. I don't know the laws in New York. I don't want to be responsible to know the laws and all the quirks in those laws in New York or any other state for that matter. So, frankly, we just weren't in any position to pursue that.
But I think the point is that it's a program that's very transferable to the state of Minnesota, very easily to change and to modify to follow your administrative rules and your election procedures and laws.
We're going to go through some voter examples.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Dennis, I would like to ask some more questions about that in particular. To just be clear, is this something that you are saying then that Iowa is willing to share the actual code that underlies your Atlas system with another state?
Technically, it would be Sierra Verde County has the copyright to the program. We have sold a license, and I don't think you talked about that.
I just indicated that. Okay.
We've sold a license to the counties in Iowa that use the program. That's a license within the state of Iowa. We would have the ability to sell a license outside the state of Iowa. Would Sierra Verde County want to be in the IT business of supporting? Probably not, but is there another solution? You know, there very well could be. I guess, you know, my point is not necessarily to compete with companies, but maybe to show you what we've done, something that we're very proud of, that we think, frankly, the national awards are great, but I will tell you this, the county supervisors in Sierra Verde County, and I myself, take more pride in hearing county auditors, county supervisors from across the state say how much it's improved the quality of their elections. That's a lot more meaningful to me. Did I answer your question?
Well, I think it's a unique area for us to consider, but in the state of Minnesota, we built in-house the state voter registration system. And there are many advantages to that as we go along. We do not charge anything from the Secretary of State's office to counties. They're able to use it without charge. And so it's been done on a state level, and I commend you as a county for what you have done, and certainly county to county. But I think the idea was that if your system in Iowa is similar to that of Minnesota, without a requirement for you to be in a situation of maintaining our system, not at all. That is not the question at all, for you to maintain it or adapt it or do anything with it. But in some manner or fashion, would you as a county be willing to, I guess then in this situation, sometimes it might be cost effective to purchase from you just government to government. I mean, there are other things like this that other states to states, I mean, there are a variety of other situations similar that have been done. I'm just asking on the record, and that may be something that you and the county, but just to be clear, there would be no requirements to do anything to that code or software or anything whatsoever, maintain it, any liability, nothing whatsoever. Just a matter of government to government, common sense, taxpayers, efficiency, that sort of thing. And I don't even know if that is feasible for us in Minnesota, if there's too many differences, but I was just kind of asking.
I think the answer is yes. Okay. The county, Sierra Verde County, would consider some kind of a relationship.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Klein, I guess I'm curious, since so this was developed by the county and the county has licensed it to other counties within Iowa, so you really make any updates, so if there's any law changes, Saragota County is really making those changes and the other counties benefit from that just from their license with you.
That's correct.
And so do they have any type of input then with you? Do you have a type of work group, or how are they cooperating to get those changes made?
The consortium of counties came into existence a week ago on Monday. The Thursday prior to that, there was a meeting of what's called the Futures Committee. It was pretty much an all-day meeting. It's comprised of representatives of all sizes of counties. Polk County had a representative. They're our largest county. Johnson County, several small counties, about a dozen people. Quite frankly, I told Dennis, who was not able to attend the meeting, that I could not have been more pleased. There are competing interests. There's different fundamental dynamics and interests in the different counties across Iowa. And those came to light. And people talked things out and came to consensus on some pretty tough issues. So, frankly, I was very pleased. So, yes, they do have an input. And, frankly, effective last Monday, I can't walk down the hall and talk to Rod and Mary and say, this is what I want. Now it's a group of counties who have to form a consensus, and they tell the programmers. We have a four-year contractual relationship to provide that IT, the maintenance of the program and support to counties.
The license provides us with the counties can do anything they want with the program, basically, except for sell it. We don't own the copyright to it, but we can determine the functionality, the distribution in the state of Iowa, make requests on the updates or innovations that we want in it. So basically, we're in control in Iowa. The only thing I think we're basically lacking from the license is the ability to sell it. That would be still Saragota's responsibility. But we can do anything we want with the program.
And then one more question, Mr. Chair, Mr. Klein. I'm curious, ballpark-wise, you invested money to create this program, and you sold licenses, I think I heard you say. Have you recouped the cost of your development of the program by those licenses?
That's a valid question. No, we have not. If we add up staff time, out-of-pocket expenses, we've expended in excess of $450,000 in Saragota County. The license that we sold to the counties is $200,000, and that's basically public record. Saragota County, we made the decision in December 2008 to move forward to develop the program, frankly, it was my expectation fully that we were we had some good ideas, that we had a good plan, that we'd worked out the obstacles, that we would have a product that other counties would be interested in.
While he thinks about that, I will tell you basically Jasper County is a county of about 37,000. My cost is roughly $2,100 a year to have the license, basically. Basically, it's figured from each county pays a base $1,500, whether you're Polk County, the largest county, or whether you're Jasper County, or whether you're Adams County, which is 5,500 people. You pay $1,500 plus a small fee per voter, per registered voter. Is that 15 cents?
Or 2 cents.
2 cents, I'm sorry, per registered voter. And so it's such a nominal fee for me to have the program updated, tech supported, new innovations added, $2,000 a year.
Translate that to Polk, just roughly.
$6,000 and change.
Hey, Mark, do you know what the population of Polk is? Is it 360,000? I don't.
Yeah, I know. But it's the biggest.
They have 300,000 voters.
300,000 voters?
Then they're larger than 360.
Wow, yeah.
Mr. Chair, briefly, what did you use to build the app?
The software?
Yeah.
The IT programmers program in SQL Server. They build it in SQL Express, which is a SQL Lite. They did it basically so that counties would not have to purchase SQL Server licenses for many computers. It's a free version of SQL. Power Builder is the front end. I don't really know what that means, okay. But maybe you do.
Thank you.
She does. More questions? Want to walk us through?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
One more question I had for you. What is the smallest county that uses the software? Did I hear correctly? Sounded like 50 voters in one county?
No. The population of Adams County is 5,500.
5,500, okay.
But the smallest county using it would be 7,000.
Yeah. So it's
population, not voters.
3,000 voters or something. 30.
But they still find this worthwhile to pay that $1,500 licensing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that speaks very strongly that even a small county, and Mr. Chairman, I think that's important for our townships, and we do have those kinds of small counties, that I think that speaks to a lot of the value, because we can all understand a large county, but when a small county does, that speaks even more strongly. So thank you.
Before we began today, I was visiting with Ron. And Ron, are you still willing to come
sure.
be my voter?
I'm willing to take my place.
So that's why I asked you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to turn you into one in okay. 5 minutes. So.
Are you 104?
Not quite.
Almost. I heard recently the average age nationwide is 74 for precinct officials. You have a series of voter handouts. This first one is Floyd Adams, and at the bottom it says regular voter. Okay. I'm going to go through just a few examples very quickly. What we train our precinct officials is to type three letters of the last name, one letter of the first name, and hit the enter key. Use the tab key, the enter key, keep your hands on the keyboard. So very quickly, it just searched 32,000 registered voters. The database it has in here right now is Cerro Gordo County. We have 32,000 registered voters. We pull four files from the state voter registration system, our registered voters, the address library, absentee voters, and the felon list. And we load those into the program. So it doesn't
say those four again.
The voters, addresses, absentees, felons.
Mr. Chairman, can I clarify again?
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if we interrupt as you go through?
Not a bit.
Oh, thanks. So on the address list, one of the things in Minnesota is we did change the state voter registration system to be an address-based list because voters move, addresses don't. For the most part, they might change a bit. But so you have an actual address file that goes into the system.
Yes.
In addition to a list of the names, and those names are, if they came with addresses, you bring them with?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
The voter list includes a lot of data, including the voter's registered registration address. And we pull that in, and then we confirm that the voter still lives at that address. The address library is essentially for a change of address or for a new registration.
Right.
And that is just a quick reference to make sure we get the right set of voting rights and ballot type.
And that's an address ranges, basically. So you're saying
yes.
From 1 to 100 on Main Street
exactly.
goes in Precinct 1. So it's that's our precinct finder, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We actually assign what we call a split code, and then, yes, but you understand that. Yes. All right, so I'm looking for Floyd Adams. In 32,000 voters, it didn't take very much information. I have Floyd and Frank, excuse me, and I can click on the one I want. When I find the right voter, or who I think is the right voter, I click the select button, or I can double click. There's three screens here that do accomplish two purposes. One, do we have the voter's current information? And two, do we have the right voter? Because maybe I was a little quick on the draw and I selected the wrong voter. So in this case, the voter has filled out on the form. By the way, this is called a declaration of eligibility form in Iowa. It has been the historical method for voters to check in when they come into the polls. They fill out this information, and then they hand it to the precinct official. So if I'm a precinct official, I'm on this side of the table, the voter would hand me their form. Okay, but they filled this out in advance. There is, five, 6 years ago, there was a change to the law that allows signing in the register. Is that something that you do in Minnesota?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that what everybody does, or most people do?
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Okay. All right. This is, again, based on Iowa law. Obviously, there's going to be differences between states. So in any case, I'm going to confirm the voter's address. Floyd has filled out on his form the same address where he's registered, So I'm going to click forward here. Now, if he had a different address, I might inquire and say, did you used to live at this other address? Or maybe I realize I picked the wrong voter. In this case, the answer is correct, and I go forward. I would then confirm the voter's date of birth. By the way, pretty much everybody in Sarasota County was born on July 4th, 1976. And the voters' names that you see today are Floyd County and Adams County. So these are fictional voters and fictional dates of birth, basically to protect people's information. So, but I would, at this point, this information is not on the form, so I would ask the voter, can you confirm the date of birth for me?
July 4th.
I'm going to go forward there. You can see I have the same three choices. I would then confirm the voter's name. There could be a Lloyd and a Floyd at the same address, same date of birth, might be twins, right? So I need to confirm that I have the correct voter here. So I look at the form, and Floyd is the one I'm looking for. The precinct register is what we call it, and what do you call it, where the list of voters, roster?
Roster.
Okay.
Paper roster.
So we call it register, you call it roster, but... The information that's required by law to be on that paper register is on this screen, and this is an informational screen. I rarely do anything here. I just go forward. Okay, so I just look at that. In Iowa, we have the right to challenge somebody's right to vote or eligibility to vote. Do you have that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's a very rare thing. In Sierra Gorda County, I think we've had one in 20 years. So it's just not very common in Iowa outside of somebody voting in the wrong precinct, which is an automatic challenge. Okay. So this question is a defaulted no. If the answer were yes, I would click yes. There's actually seven or eight legal reasons that I can challenge somebody's eligibility to vote. So I'm going to go forward there. The last screen reminds me to initial the voter's declaration of eligibility form. So I do that. I tear off the label. And I very neatly slap it on there. I hand it to Floyd. And I say, take that over to Margaret, and she will give you a ballot. Now, if you look on the second... sheet which shows the label for Floyd.
You already got the label.
Yeah, so the stapled on sheet.
Okay. Yeah. You can see that this label accomplishes a couple purposes. One, it tells Margaret, who's handing the ballots out, that this voter is qualified to vote here. Okay, that the voter's in the right precinct, that he's met all the qualifications, and there's no restrictions on him voting. It also tells Margaret the correct ballot type. In a primary election, and I don't know if you have primary elections, it tells the party ballot, Republican or Democratic party ballot. So he takes, basically, and this is his ticket to vote. He hands it to Margaret. She gives him a ballot. So it's a ticket. Okay. My next voter is actually going to be me. This is my real driver's license. And on the back of the driver's license is a stacked barcode. There's two barcodes. It's a funny-looking barcode. And do you have that kind of a barcode on your license?
Not yet.
Just one. Okay.
So,
that barcode has all of the information on the front of the license actually incorporated in that barcode. So, when I scan it, watch the screen, and you can see it's actually reading all the information from that barcode across there. It finds a match, and it says, you know, this. I know who this voter is. So, I would now in this case the voter. By the way, I should have said this blank form at the bottom says regular voter scan DL, scan driver's license. Okay, so this voter did not fill out the form in advance. He wants to use his driver's license. I want to use my driver's license to check in. So I scan my license. The label will complete the form, and then I'll sign it afterwards. Okay, so I would need to confirm. Then I would say, you know, can you confirm your address for me, Ken? And he tells me 731 South Monroe Court. I would confirm the date of birth and the name. There's no special issues. If there were special issues, they would show up in red on the screen, by the way. I go forward. There's no challenge to this voter's right to vote. Again, the label prints out. I slap it on the form, and he's good to go. Okay. We started using the scanners a year and a half ago at the city elections. In Sarasota County, we developed this. We talked about it for several years, and frankly, the IT guys were stumped by two forms of drive. In Iowa, there were two forms. They were changing from one format to another format. They were stumped by that. They gave up on it. They picked it up a year and a half ago, and they developed it. We did not tell the voters in advance. This scanner, by the way, that I'm using is a barcode scanner or reader. It tilts up and down. It's a tabletop model. and we would actually face this toward the voter. Okay, we tried several of the guns. The problem with that we found is that you have to be the right distance, and you can't have an angle on that. This is a very forgiving scanner. Basically, if you get that barcode in that red light, you know, it will read that barcode. So, but we face that toward the voter. In Iowa, and I think in Minnesota, photo ID has been a very divisive political issue. Some people know it's the right thing to do and can't believe that they're not doing it, and some people think it's the most evil thing in the world. The program is based on what the law is in Iowa today, not on what I think or somebody else thinks the law should be. So basically, we are, you know, ready if there's ever a requirement in the law. But basically, this is a voluntary thing on the voter's part. So we were a little concerned, especially with the photo ID, the divisiveness of the photo ID issue, and we didn't tell the voters in advance. We didn't want to have a disaster if we told everybody and promoted the heck out of it. In fact, more than 70% of the people who came in that day, not knowing they could do so, voluntarily scanned their driver's licenses. We have since added the voter card. I believe in Minnesota you have a voter card that you mail to registered voters. Yes. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
And in Iowa, do you use a barcode on there?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a barcode on here, and just watch the screen. It is very fast to find that voter. So we have added that. That I'm just going to terminate.
And what they cost per scanner?
This is about the whole setup. Computer's about $500. Scanner's about $300. The printer's about $200. And that's rough, but it's about $1,000 a set. Yeah. Typical setup in most precincts is going to be two sets of these. Okay, in Sarasota County, we have two sets. Our largest precinct, we had 968 voters, I believe, last November, in person at mm-hmm. the polls that day, and more than that voted absentee in that precinct. In our small, we had three small precincts. We could get along with one set, but we weren't sure when we started. We bought two of each, and that's what we use. So in Iowa, there would be some precincts that are large enough because they're in a fast-growing area. We are controlled by population as far as the size of the precincts every 10 years. But then after that, population can expand. And in those precincts, you know, they could use, you know, three setups. In university precincts where we have a whole lot of election day registrations, they could use four, maybe even five. You know, it is that intensive, especially with election day registrations. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Klein, one more question for you in regards to that. So when you have those stations set up, do you, anybody can use any one of them for any reason, whether it's Election Day registration or they're pre-registered or whatever it is. They just come up to the first available station, whatever the quantity is?
That's a good question, and that is the way that we have used the system, and other counties have used the system. Some of the large counties have asked for a help, what we call a help ticket process, where especially in a university precinct or some precinct where there's a lot of election day registrations, you want your best person on those. Now, mm-hmm. the program will walk everybody through it, but still you want somebody who can type very quickly and analyze information and just handle the labels and move pretty quickly through it. In Sierra Gorda, what we've done at times, if we have an election day, if we got two computers, we got election day registration, and somebody starts to register over here, and it's busy. If it's not busy, we don't care. But if it's busy, we say, we're going to have you get in this line over here, and I'm going to make this the fast lane. So that's just a management process that we've used in Sierra Gorda, and frankly, I think a lot of counties have adopted that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that is really valid. Those who have pre-registered and everything is good to go, you want to get them in voting, move on, and not have those folks be caught in a line of that. But like you said, if it's not real busy, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But if it is, but I'm sure the counties here in Minnesota have the same concerns or the same values that, you know, keep it moving. And so it was good to hear that. Thank you.
We've talked about tablet usage at the front door where somebody comes in, they can scan something quickly and basically determine, yep, you're in the right precinct. Yes, you're registered. There's no special issues. Get in that lane, you know, line one. And if you got to register, then go to line three or whatever. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that. We don't have that yet, But frankly, it's on our list, and I expect sometime in the next year we will.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
I have a question. You had mentioned that you could have one, two, three multiple sets. How are they talking to each other? Is it a hardwire, wireless? How do you know that somebody who registered on one set doesn't do it on the other sample?
Great question. In Cerro Verde County, we only use two, so simple crossover cable, like $7. We have one set up as the master, the other secondary. The secondary gets information from the master and feeds information to the master. When you have more than two, you can't use that setup. We have wireless access points, and a number of counties have done that way. Clay County, Iowa, which is not a large county, I think they have 7 precincts. They use a top-down set, but they have a great IT staff. It's the home of Solutions Software Company. And so they got some really good resources there. But they use a top-down system where they only have one master database for the entire county. There's other counties that have talked about, we have the communication where we can send information to a central database, and we've actually been doing that for a couple of years. But there's other talk about, some counties want to network those in different ways, and frankly, we're exploring some of those IT ideas.
Mr. Chair, another question, please. The data that's downloaded, is that static, like our paper rosters? It's at one point of time, this is it?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, that's a great question because it can't. You touched on an idea earlier. Is your biggest day for absentee voting the day before the election?
The Saturday before and the Monday before.
Yeah, our Monday. And Cerro Verde will have 450 people show up that day. Now, that's probably nothing compared to some of the counties in Minnesota, but that's huge for us. So we close the absentee voting at 5 o'clock. We're required by law to have those absentee voters specifically sent to their precincts by 6 in the morning. How do we accomplish that? If we process the past until last year, what we've done is process them in the state voter registration system, download a new file, load it into one computer, copy the database to the other computers before we send them out. And we can have that done in about 20 minutes. So it's a fairly quick process. But the precinct officials have to come in. They got it on election the night before the election and pick up those master computers and then take them back. A better process that we actually used last year is to transmit. We have a central database, and it sends out an updated complete absentee file for the entire county. When they turn the master computer on, presuming they have connectivity, then there'll be a message pop up within a minute, downloaded absentee file, complete, or I don't know what it says.
And what about those that are in, like, a township hall where there isn't connectivity? What, they just out of luck kind of...
Well, no, we would actually have them come in and pick up the computers,
so that's 5:30, the other option.
6 o'clock the night before.
Yeah, so there's two, in ways they end up being equal, but they're quite different.
Yeah. Another option would be, and I know counties have taken different solutions to this, to take a flash drive. Instead of having them come in, maybe they have the local ones come in. If it's a large city, you have a lot of precincts there. But you take a flash drive out first thing in the morning and update. There's different solutions to that. The communication really is the solution there, I think. Okay, so my next voter is Warren Butler. Everybody see that? And again, I type 3 letters of the last name, 1 letter of the first name. I select Warren. And he's filled out 2010 South Madison. I'm not going to scan any other licenses today because, quite frankly, it is extraordinarily difficult to duplicate a barcode on the back of the license. So I'm going to type these in as manually as that is going to be. So I confirm the address. I confirm the date of birth. And I look at his name, and it's Warren Butler. Now, here the screen tells me that Warren requested an absentee ballot. In Iowa, we have no excuse absentees. Basically, anybody can request an absentee ballot. The problem for the precinct officials in Iowa has always been they have to make a good decision that probably can't be unmade and with very limited information. Do they know that the voter received the ballot? Did they know the voter cast the ballot or that returned the ballot or it was invalid or it was valid to be counted? They don't know any of that. All they know is the county auditor says, we mailed a ballot to Warren Butler. Okay? So again, this is an informational screen. I go forward. The blue text is what I would actually say to the voter. And this is really the, you know, the easy voters are nothing. I mean, electronic poll books, they handle the easy voters. Now we're getting into, okay, here's the special situations. So, Warren, according to the county auditor, you request an absentee ballot. Do you have that with you? Tell me this.
Yes.
So, good job. We're gonna say no here in a minute. Okay. But basically, it will go to a screen. It's like a logic tree is what I think of it, flow chart. It goes in whatever direction based on the voter's response or the voter's situation. So in Iowa, when we send out an absentee ballot, we have four envelopes, we have a set of instructions, we have the ballot. Well, if Warren says he has the ballot, he has to show me the ballot. I don't want to see the envelopes, I want to see the ballot. So he shows me the ballot, I write void on it, and This is what we use for what we call a forms organizer in Sarasota County. A lot of counties use this. Some counties use slightly different systems. Basically, my blank forms are in the front. My completed forms go back here. So I write void on it, or the voter writes void on it, and I put it in the surrendered absentee ballots folder. Okay. You can see the forward button is grayed out until I acknowledge that I completed each of those steps. So the precinct roster screen now is changed to say voter surrendered an absentee ballot. I go forward here. Actually, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to go back to the screen where he requested. And before we chose, he said yes, and now he's going to tell me no. He doesn't have it with him. He lost it. Have you ever, you're a local election official, mm-hmm. You ever heard this before?
Absolutely.
Lost it. Don't know what happened to it. The dog ate it.
Dog ate it. Mm-hmm.
But I want to vote. You know, I didn't vote that ballot, so I want to vote. Now, in Iowa, we have then the right to cast a provisional ballot, and I assume you have that as well?
No.
We don't do provisionals.
I'm sorry?
We do not do provisionals. You can register on election day in your correct precinct and vote. You don't do any provisionals.
Okay. So how? Now, you just expanded the use of absentees, right?
Right.
So how do
right.
you prevent somebody from...
Our Chairman, if I can
yes,
answer.
Yes, go ahead.
Right. We basically will only notify on the roster if the ballot absentee ballot has been accepted. We don't mark the roster if a ballot has been issued.
Okay.
So we would only mark it if they came in and the roster was already marked as an AB. That ballot's been accepted and they can't vote in the polling place.
So they simply can't cast
they can't
the
vote.
For
yeah.
any reason in Minnesota.
No.
I mean,
right.
you could okay. potentially have an argument or something like that, but basically you can't vote.
Okay.
It says AB.
There are no provisionals.
No.
Oh, okay. Wow. No. I didn't realize. Mm-hmm.
You'd have to make a heck of an argument and then sign the oath and stuff. You know.
Okay. I'm going to terminate working with this voter rather than go through the provisional process, which is kind of a waste of time for you. Now, when we terminate working with a voter, which means they're going to leave without voting, okay, we actually cast a reason. We actually capture a reason. Mm-hmm. We don't want to, 3 days after the election, somebody say, well, they didn't let me vote. Without being able to have some record that says, here's the information why that person left without voting. In this case, the program interprets the information and says, well, I think it's because he went to get his absentee ballot. If that's the right reason, I can just go forward. Or if there's another reason, we'll come back later. I type that in and go forward. I'm going to show you the ballot count button. We've had two regular voters. At this point, we typically have a provisional voter, but you don't have that. So, all right. My next voter is Carol Benton. Again, I will type a little information, select the voter. And there's a different address. You can see he's filled out 2015 South Jefferson Avenue, and I see that he's registered at 731 South Mississippi. So I might ask at this point, Carol, did you used to live at 731 South Mississippi? And he says, yeah, I did, but I moved. This is my new address. I called the auditor's office, and they said I was supposed to vote here. Okay. Now, as a precinct official, I hear that, and I think, well, hopefully that's correct, but do I know it's correct? I'm not sure. So, in any case, what I do know is I need to update the voter's registration address. We train the precinct officials to type very little information. We tell them type the house number, part of the street name, hit the enter key. It searches all of the address library for the county and says, well, here's the only one that matches. So I select it. This is the first voter registration screen. When you register to vote in Iowa, we have to capture certain information, name, address, date of birth, and so forth. And most of that information is captured here. I'm going to go forward. This is the voter registration address part of that. You can see at the top here is the new address that I captured. We also kept the old address, which for processing after the election is quite handy. They have them both in the same place. I go forward. In the upper right-hand corner, you can see it says registration in a little white box, and it says put the three labels on the white voter registration form. The forms are color-coded, and these are the voter registration forms in Iowa. They're a half sheet of paper. They're a little complicated looking. You guys have a similar voter registration type form?
We went to an F-11, but we're familiar with this.
Okay. For today's purposes, I'm going to use this practice form. Okay. Basically, it has room for three labels. I'm going to ask Ron to help me here. For today's purposes, we're using a label printer, but in the version that will be out next month, we have the ability for counties to choose a standard printer, 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper printer, laser printer, whatever type of printer they want. So with no training whatsoever, Ron has successfully filled out the voter registration form with the use of labels. Let me ask you this. How often, when they come back filled out by hand from the precincts, are they complete and accurate?
There's always mistakes.
And legible. What about legible?
Yeah. And, you know, tell me the mistakes on here are illegibility or incompleteness.
One of the biggest mistakes is date of birth being the election date. Always put the date of birth as the election date.
Now, this screen tells me put three labels on, tell the voter to review the information and sign it. And Ron says, hey,
didn't sign.
You got me as, just a second. You're not going to sign it because you say, hey, you got me as a Democrat, but I want to be a no party because I don't want to get those phone calls. You know, we ask at this point in the training, we ask the precinct officials, what would you do? And they typically get the deer in the headlights, like, can you go back? Actually, you could, but we tell them, fix it on paper, because it's actually the paper record that's the official record. And frankly, they feel much more comfortable. They don't have to worry about screwing up the machine if they just fix it on paper. So we would have the voter initial that change and sign the form, and then I would put it away in my forms file.
And the paper record is the official record because that's what's required by Iowa law?
Yes. At some time, you know, that may change. Sometimes technology precedes changes in law. We have the capacity. But as I said, the program is built for what the law is, not for what I think or somebody else thinks the law should.
But will you have to then take them and type this information?
That's a good question. Actually, yes. Today we do. We have envisioned and hoped for a change into the state voter registration system, but it has not been forthcoming, to be able to upload that information, check it, proof it, and post it.
So that would have to come at the level of the Office of Secretary of State making adjustments.
Program change would have to
program change, right.
Yep. So I put the form away. I'm just going to throw it in there. Now, in Iowa, one of the difficult things is, and I don't know what your laws are in this respect in Minnesota, but when I move, if I move within the same precinct, all I have to do is fill out that form. If I move into a new precinct, I have to then prove who I am. Mm-hmm. And here is the list of IDs that Iowa law requires to prove who I am. So I would ask Carol, do you have a driver's license or ID card of any sort?
Yes.
And he tells me, yes, he's got a driver's license. And I do one step at a time here. I don't worry about any other requirements. I worry what the screen is asking me at the moment. So the only other requirement here is that in Iowa, it cannot be expired. Okay, it has to be current and valid, is the language in the law. So he shows me his license. I check and confirm that it's current and valid. I'm going to go forward. He came in. He was registered in a different address, different precinct, and he proved who he was, filled out the voter registration form, and he is good to go. My next voter is Marion Davis.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes.
Mr. Klein, the question I have is that I know that you have the ability to scan there, the driver's license or ID card. Is it also able to populate the voter registration form?
Yep. And I can do that with Dennis's driver's license.
If you had a real driver's license.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could, yes, we'd populate that. And quite frankly, it saves all that typing and the errors that come with it. Yep. So now, when we train the precinct officials, when you get a long list of names, add a little more information to search for the voter. So I'm looking for Marion Davis. And again, there's a different address. Marion has filled out 26 North Yorktown Pike on the form. So I would say, you know, Marion, did you used to live at 403 22nd Southwest? And Marion says, oh, well, yeah, this is my new address, but I've always voted here. You know, sometimes they're not sure where they vote, but they know where they have voted.
Mm-hmm.
So now, does that mean Marion belongs here today? Well, we're going to find out. So we're going to update the address. Again, we type the house number, part of the street name. I'm looking for North Yorktown Pike. And Marion, Iowa law requires each voter to vote in the precinct where you live based on your address, your polling place is the Gray Seaford Church. So on the back of that form is this label that printed out. This is a real game changer, and I don't know how you do it, but in Iowa, it takes at best 5 to 6 minutes to try to figure out where to send that voter if they don't belong in this precinct. If it's a manual process, and there's at least three places where I can mess that up. That's why I'm guessing you have heard, I know I've heard in Sarasota County and across the state, you know, well, I went here and they said I had to go over here and they sent me to this third place. I don't have time, I'm just not going to vote. And that's a very frustrating thing. So this is a real game changer. It feeds off the address tables from the state voter registration system. It is fast. It is accurate. And frankly, if it takes 5 to 7 minutes for me to figure out where to send Marion to vote, you know, Marion may have 5, 6, 7 people behind him at that point. And he's frustrated. I looked over here, and then I went to a second book, and then I went to a third resource, and then I had to do a fourth thing to figure out where to send him. And he doesn't know if I know what I'm doing. And he's embarrassed because he's held up the line. So he's blaming me. Here, you know, what we've seen is a complete reduction and almost elimination in people voting in the wrong precinct in the counties that use this system. That's a wonderful thing, because in Iowa, you vote in the wrong precinct, your ballot will not count.
So this, if I may, Mr. Chair, the barcode that's on this notice that tells them they're in the wrong location, what does that data contain? Can they then scan it when they get to the new location?
That's a great question. The answer is yes. That's Marion's voter ID number. Let me show you that. I'm going to terminate, and it says voter was in the wrong precinct. Again, the program interprets, and you can correct it if you need to. So I scan this. Marion Davis pops up. So he can actually take this to the new polling place. We put it on the back so that the person handing out ballots in the new place doesn't see a label and say, oh, yeah, they get a ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to terminate working with Marion. Shelby Jackson is my last voter, and this is an election day registration. I'm just going to tell you, if I search for Shelby Jackson, I'm not going to find Shelby. So what I'm going to do is click register new voter. The first thing we want to do is find out if Shelby's in the correct precinct. South Monroe Court. This is the voter registration information that I have to type if we don't scan the license. And Shelley, what political party would you like?
Democrat.
Okay. Now, if I actually try to go forward here, it won't let me if there's missing information that's required.
Mm-hmm.
So I choose Democrat. Where's my forward button?
There's no one.
What's that?
There's no one. Not there.
I know.
Is it where did you send the driver's license? Where did the driver's license
come? No. Well, quite frankly, I don't know what just happened. I've used this program 4.5 years and I'm a little embarrassed.
Yeah, put a middle name.
No, it's hung up and I don't know why. So
do you have 5 digits in the last 4 digits, Social Security? I can't tell.
I think I'm going to have to kill the program and come back in. I apologize. I don't know what the...
Well, Ken's doing that. You know, one of the advantages is...
While Ken is doing that, one of the advantages is this. Behind the screen is a myriad of information. If you do not have a barcode that can be scanned from some device, a license or registration card, something, you know, there's a series of questions. What is your birthday? Secretary Ritchie, can you guess my birthday?
What's your birthday?
11/22/1954. I was born on JFK's assassination. Anyway, 9 years before. But anyway... So somebody walking in, for voter fraud, the real chance that you're going to be able to guess a number of voters' birthdays is going to be near impossible, as well as getting the correct address and the right license number and that type of thing. But again, the person behind the screen is seeing that. A lot of the blue language that you saw is actually saying the voter or the poll worker, a precinct worker, reads this to the voter to get the data information from them. So even if there was not a license or a voter card, you can verify a voter very easily and get the right information. And it's going to be very difficult for somebody to trick the system. Extremely, extremely difficult.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes.
I'm just curious about the conversation of this private data with the voter. Do you have the line set up so that the election judge is talking to the voter one-on-one so that others aren't hearing the birth date? Are they looking at a document and putting it in? How do you handle that particular situation?
You know, that's a good question. And frankly, we handle it in the line. In 4 years across the state of Iowa, I have not heard one complaint. And that's a little surprising to me.
Yeah.
You know, some people might object to that. What we ask for is the month and the day. Now, most people will tell us month, day, year, you know, and they're proud of it, you know. But what we ask for is the month and day. The reason we added that, frankly, is the first time we used the program, we had 4 precincts. We combined precincts. We had 1,000 people per polling place show up on that day. And we had 4 mistakes. In each case, they selected somebody in the same family at the same address, but the wrong person. And we added the date and month of birth because it's another filter. You know, you'd have to have somebody born on the same month and day in the same address to confuse that. So I recreated Shelby Jackson, and I apologize. I don't know, honestly know what happened there. It just went blank on me. But anyway, when I went forward then, this is something that we do that I don't know if anybody else is doing, but it's something that we can do. And frankly, it's a good thing, in my opinion. In Iowa, when you register to vote, there's things that happen after that. You know, when you fill out the voter registration form, you turn it to the county auditor, you think you're done. Well, there's things that happen, in Iowa at least. One, if you're required to give us your Iowa driver's license number or the last 4 digits of your Social Security number. And whichever one you give us, we compare against that database. So we call up the DOT database or the Social Security database, and we say, hey, is there a Shelby Jackson with this day of birth? And in fact, there's comes back and says, yep, there's a one-to-one person there, and they're not already registered. Okay, so that's something that happens. Another thing that happens is we mail a voter registration card, and it's non-forwardable. So if it comes back, we suspect that person might not live there. So we know there's a person, and they're not registered, and we know we have a high confidence that they live where they say they live. The third thing we do is compare them against the list of convicted felons. On election day, and the only way to do that is through a program. Mm-hmm. So we load the list of felons in here, and it's not perfect, but we match as much as we can. We match a variety of criteria. In this case, it matched on the last name, Jackson, the first letter of the first name, so Susan or Shelby, it starts with an S, and the date of birth. Everybody was born on July 4th, 1976 in Cerro Gordo, so it found a match, or a possible match, actually. And at this point, there has to be some interaction with the precinct official. Now, do you have this issue in Minnesota where you have felons showing up to vote? Okay, so if I'm a 74-year-old precinct official, and I've got... You know, tattooed, bearded, 6'4" biker standing there, and he looks a little threatening to me, and I'm a little concerned, you know, how I handle this situation. If it's a possible match, I click that box, there's a label prints out, and I believe it's on the back of one of your forms. And it says, I'm just going to read it so everybody knows, voter name, possible match on felon list. The voter's name is a possible match to a name on the official statewide list of convicted felons. The voter has the right to cast a provisional ballot, can contact the office of the Secretary of State, or can contact the county auditor, and it gives the numbers and the addresses for that, those contacts. So I would actually, you know, have this printout. I would hand this to the voter, and very discreetly, you know, the voter would have a chance to read that without me saying, are you a convicted felon? You know, in front of a lot of people. It's just a very polite, professional way to handle that discreetly. So in this case, the voter name does not match because Susan is not Shelby. I go forward. This is the address screen, and I would say, do you have an apartment number, P.O. Box, or separate mailing address?
25.
P.O. Box 25?
Yeah.
Go forward there. It tells me I need the yellow election day registration form. This is the form. This is a practice form that we use in Iowa. The only thing that's different from it is the real form is the voter registration form. But for practice purposes, when we're training precinct officials, again, I'm going to help you. Maybe you help me with this. We slap the labels on. I tell the voter to review the information and sign it. In Iowa, when you register on election day, you have to sign an additional oath. And the oath is actually printed on the form. The forms can be used with or without labels. So we worked with the Secretary of State's office to revise the election forms, and that was one of their requirements, and I think it was a good requirement. So I peel this label off and stick it. The voter signs the information. As the precinct official, I have to witness that signature. Again, these are requirements in Iowa. When somebody registers on election day, they have to prove two things, who they are and where they live. One of the most common ways to prove who they are and where they live is the driver's license. So I would say, do you have a driver's license or other form of ID? And Shelby's going to tell me yes, and I go forward. Then I look at the expiration date. And let's say at this point the expiration date is not current and valid, so I would select no. I would hand the driver's license back and tell the voter it's invalid. And do you have any of these other forms, a passport, ID card, employer ID card, student ID card?
Yes, U.S. passport.
Tell me no. Okay. So he tells me no this time after I wrestle him on it. And then I would, another way outside of documentation to prove who I am and where I live is another voter can vouch for me. So is there a registered voter in this precinct to vouch?
Yes.
And Floyd Adams is your guy. He's voting over there at the booth, and we have him come over. I select him, and the program just checked four things. One, is Floyd a registered voter? Two, is he registered in this precinct? Does he live in this precinct? Three, has he attested for anybody else, or has he been attested for? In Iowa, you can only attest once, and you can't have been attested for that election. So Floyd passed all of those criteria, and I move forward. There is an attester's oath label that prints out. In this case, we put it on the form. The attester signs it. I witness the signature and go forward. I've already returned the photo ID, put my paperwork away, and Shelby came in. She was not registered to vote, she registered. She proved who she was, where she lived, through an attester, and I go forward. You can see, I don't know if you can see it on the screen, this little box here attested, it has a check mark by it. So, and again in Iowa, if Shelby tried to attest for somebody else, she would not be able to. Okay, so Shelby cast a regular ballot. Those are the examples that I wanted to go through quickly. I'm happy to respond to questions.
Mr. Chair, for me. During the course of your examples here, you had a few times where you terminated the voter and gave your reason why. Is there a log of that at the end of your election that you can capture to have?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of reporting. Frankly, it's just a real nice product. I spent about a month, seriously, about a month of my time after the election in November going over every detail of the election records from all 26 precincts in Cerro Gordo. And quite frankly, it just gave me a great deal of confidence in this program. There are mistakes. There are, you know, voter mistakes, not very many. couple more precinct official mistakes. We try to make it foolproof is not a word I like, but we try to make it as hard to mess up as possible. If a precinct official is just bound and determined, you know, once in a while they can get around the process.
And one further contingency plans that you have in place if you have no power, if your computer has the issue like you had earlier, what do you have in place for contingency plans?
You know, that's another great question. We're a paper-based system. We send out the paper roster, and so if their computer's out of business, they go to the paper system immediately. And really, there should be no downtime in that. They're going to have to adjust a little bit, get back, you know, get the wrinkles out of that process, but they'll be back up and running. Sarah Gordo, in the last 4.5 years, we have not had that happen, but it will happen someday, hopefully after I retire. one of the counties in Iowa just told me a month ago that they had a special election in a basement, a church basement. Power was out, and they used the computers for lighting. So people came and marked their ballots by the computers. Now, the scanner is actually operational. The printer is out of business because it has a separate power source. Mm-hmm. But they completed the forms by hand.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, the paper-based system is because, again, it's Iowa law, is that? Or is it because that's what your county has decided is your backup for that purpose?
That's Iowa law.
Okay.
Would I be supportive of changing that? I think a lot of people would in Iowa. Personally, I'm kind of a paper guy. I mean, elections, like I said, there's no do-overs, and I want as complete a paper record as possible. Now, if I can have a matching electronic record, that's even better, but I don't want to give up the paper personally, but that is the law.
So when you have a paper system, if you have the rosters are printed, are you still making the voters sign the rosters?
No.
In addition to these, they just turning in these?
Yes.
These
declaration
sheets.
Of eligibility
yeah.
form. Right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious if when you implemented this, I know you tried to make it to mirror the paper as much as possible. Did you find any conflicts with state law? Did you need state law to be changed in order to implement this, or were you able just to implement it?
We worked within the existing state law. There were changes the very first year in state law. Since there has been no changes in election law that have impacted this. But, you know, we would, as I said, the program is written within the law. If the law changes, we'll revise the program.
Kevin? Just a quick comment. I find it very interesting that you, with all this technical know-how and knowledge of the electronic whatever, still want a paper trail.
There'd be people that disagree, and I respect that.
Well, I think it's important.
I personally, mm-hmm. I'm a paper guy.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I have a question. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, with all these little individual papers, how do you reconcile at the end of the night, and how do you store all these little pieces? You know, how does that piece work?
The forms are handed to Margaret, who's handing the ballots out. We use just a spindle, so she sticks them on a spindle. The poll watchers have the right to actually handle those, look at those forms, which when we've given them the electronic access, they really don't care about handling the forms. They want the information real time, so that's kind of gone away. As far as storage, we're required to keep them for a federal election for 22 months. After the November election, I looked at every one of those in Cerro Gordo. Basically, I just wanted to make sure that everything reconciled. You know, did this number of voters, I can check this ballot count button. This is pretty cool. Do you reconcile the number of voters with the number of ballots?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is pretty cool for precinct officials, and they really like this feature. At any time, now, it actually puts a number on the form, on the label, so there's no voter number one or two or three. There can be errors there when two or more computers process at the same moment on the same screen.
Mm-hmm.
It can confuse and say, there's two number fives, then it'll skip number six. This ballot count button is always accurate. So the regular voters, that balances with the number of ballots in the machine. So at any time during the day, if I say, hey, I got 376 voters, how many you got? How many ballots do you have? And she says 374. Well, we look over in the voting booth, and there's two voters, because they haven't got their ballots in the ballot box yet.
So we typically are
tying out at, you know, after things close, but are there times that you do this in the middle of the day?
Check the number of voters?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, one of the cool things about having either a top-down system or a system that communicates from the precincts is that I can real-time see in Clear Lake, Ward 2, they're going nuts. You know, at 9 o'clock in the morning, they've had 200 voters already. What's going on in Clear Lake 2? And I can say, holy cow, we actually have a little screen that extrapolates the number of ballots. It takes the number of ballots I sent, the number of voters at a point in time. It says, you're going to run out, and you're going to be 40 ballots short, or you're going to be 100 ballots long. And that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Do you guys call the precincts to get that information?
We do.
I mean, isn't that
Or they
terrible?
Call us in a panic, yes.
Getting somebody to answer, yeah, they call you and say, we got five ballots left,
yeah.
And, you know, and they're 30 miles away.
Mm-hmm. And it's snowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that communication, even if you don't have the poll watcher function, that's pretty valuable. Mm-hmm. And the text messaging is not something that we have today, but it's something that we're the IT folks are working on. And frankly, if you get a text message and says, hey, Margaret just fell down. We think she broke her leg. The ambulance is on the way. So, you know, well, hey, it would be nice to know that in real time. And, okay, you know, we're going to send out a replacement or thanks for the update or whatever.
More questions? Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think this has given us a ton to both think about, but also just to try to process in our heads. I'm assuming we can call you and email you on occasion and bug you as other questions pop into our brains. I'm sure we will have more of those, but thank you again. I don't believe there's any other business on our agenda today. We've set a next time. We'll have the appointees from the governor, and hopefully all here will be able to attend, but some will not. And we'll go over the work plan, and we will begin the presentations from the vendors, again, trying to give us just a broader picture of the things that are available. So any other last-minute business? Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everybody.